From the Hall Hero community, I'm Jay Armour, and welcome to Voices from the Highway. Today's guest is legendary trucker Barry Matthews, known to many as Bear the Voice. Barry has been driving for over 30 years and has some amazing tales to share. We caught up with Barry last week in Corinth, Mississippi, as he reflected on some of his earliest memories of his parents, especially his dad, and the influence he had on his life, his career, and the man he is today. Barry takes us back to a 10-year-old boy living in Texas in the mid-1970s.
My parents had divorced in late 1977. My dad moved to Sulphur Springs, Texas, and bought half ownership in the Lone Star Truck Stop. My mother's sister and I moved to Brownwood, Texas, into a very small one-bedroom frame house. I'll never forget that house. Faded white paint, peeling. The bathroom had a clawfoot bathtub in it. The clawfoot bathtub, I remember it so well. Although this was 44 years ago. I remember it so well because that's where I slept. After we got done with our nightly baths and the tub was drained and dried out, Mama would pile quilts in the tub. And that's where I'd go to bed at. Now, my mom had a little twin bed in there and my sister had one of those folding army cots. And that's where we lived. That's how we lived. We didn't have much. I was on the free lunch program at school. And of course, that was very embarrassing to me. But everybody's got to eat, you know. And when you don't have any money, you do what you have to do. Now, I don't want you thinking that my dad was a deadbeat dad. He was far from it. He paid his child support plus a whole lot more. All he could afford. But it was a hard time for us. My dad came to visit us Christmas 1977. And that was a great time. It was really cold in Brownwood for some reason that year. Seems like winters were colder back then. But I didn't see him again until around July of 78. So when Mama told us we were going to Sulphur Springs to see Daddy, I just couldn't wait. Even though I knew I was going to have to ride in the back seat of that 1972 red faded paint Chevy Vega car. No air conditioning, nothing but an AM radio, but hell, I don't think anything else had anything other than an AM radio in it back then.
And so, Barry's mom, behind the wheel of their 1972 red Chevy Vega, leave Brownwood, headed for Sulphur Springs. Barry and his sister are planted in the back seat, listening to the AM radio, gazing out the window. Barry recalls memories of the highway signs that draw him closer to his daddy and his Lone Star truck stop.
The truck stop my daddy bought, it was branded Skelly. Now, Skelly's not in the southern states anymore, but back then it was big down in the south. And if you've ever seen a Skelly sign, you know it's a great big diamond, blue background with a big old S in the middle of it. Really distinctive sign. And I knew what the sign looked like, although I'd never been to that truck stop before. But I swear, 30 miles probably before we got to Sulphur Springs, every blue sign I saw, I swear to God, that was the Skelly sign. Mama, 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 that's the Skelly sign. I see the truck stop. No, baby, no. We're still too far away. No, I can see the sign. And then I finally did see it. We took the College Street exit off of I-30. and had to go past the old Ramada Inn. Hell, it's not there anymore either. But we pull into the driveway of the truck stop, and my dad is standing right outside the front door. Now, he knew we were coming, but he didn't know when we would be there. But I can still see my daddy. 6 foot tall, black hair, button-down uniform shirt. Now, although he owned the thing, he owned the truck stop, he still wore a uniform, just like his employees did. Well, Mama pulls up an old standard transmission car, you know, she sets the parking brake, which was between the two front seats. And I was in such a hurry to get out, I didn't wait on my sister to flip the seat forward. I just dove through between the seats. That emergency brake handle got me too. We're not going to talk about where, but I was too excited to let that bother me. My sister and I run up to my daddy. We hug him. My daddy knelt down to hug us back. I remember that real well. It meant a lot to me. My mama comes trailing up behind. She says hi to my daddy, and he says hi to her. Daddy takes us inside the truck stop. When we walk in, there's an old black man named Leroy Johnson. Now, that truck stop had been built about 1960, if I remember right. And Leroy was the first employee ever hired. Leroy was something else. Now, he was a bull of a man. Big, strong, powerful. Had just meat claws for hands, you know. We walk in and Leroy's there. And he's got the butt of a cigar sticking out of his mouth. It's not lit. He just chewed on it. And I won't ever forget this. He said, "Well, Mr. Jerry, is this here your youngins?" Daddy said, "Yeah, Leroy, this is my daughter, Connie. This is my son, Barry." He sticks that huge hand out, rougher than a cob, and I shake hands with him. And he said, "Why, it's sure fine to meet you. Sure fine to meet you." "Yes, sir." Daddy takes us, me and my sister and my mama, into the restaurant. Now, I'll tell you, that restaurant was renowned for its food. And Leroy's wife, I believe her name was Bessie May. I know her name was Bessie May. I remember her well. Heavily buxom. Sweet, sweet woman. She came out of the kitchen, and I'll never forget what she said. She said, "Oh, Lord, Jerry." See, that was my daddy's name, Jerry. She said, "Oh, Lord, Jerry. These gots to be your youngins." He said, "Yeah, Bessie May. This is my daughter, Connie, and this is my son, Barry." She said, "Oh, Lord, you ain't got to tell me." She said, "Ain't no daddy's maybe on this baby." I didn't know what that meant. But then I figured it out. I got kind of a kick out of it. Bessie May said, "You children looks hungry. And I got a whole bunch of pancake batter mixed up back there already." And we were hungry. We'd been traveling pretty hard. And it was, don't know what time it was, mid-morning. Well before lunch. Well, Bessie May goes back and she gets busy cooking us some pancakes, and I swear to you, those were some of the best pancakes. I can still taste them today. Oh my goodness. I remember sitting there eating those pancakes with my sister. Of course, I'm a chatterbox, and my mama was talking with my dad some. I was sitting beside my sister in the booth. My mom was sitting beside my dad. And it was just one of the best times that you could ever imagine. I really felt special. I felt important. You know, back then, truck drivers were really a different breed than they are now. And I can remember looking around and all these truck drivers sitting either at the counter or in a booth or at a table, you know, and they're having their coffee. Most of them had probably already had their breakfast long before, but they're drinking coffee and they're talking. You know, this is before no truck driver would ever think about wearing flip-flops or cut-off pants, short pants, shorts, whatever you want to call them. Truck drivers dressed in boots, usually pointy-toed or square-toed. And they always wore a hat, trucker's cap of some sort, or a cowboy hat with a big feather hat band around it. They always had that chain wallet. Now, I didn't know at the time the reason for the chain wallet, but I did learn it later. But I'll go ahead and tell you now. The chain wallet was because back in the day, there weren't all these major fuel cards. There was Comcheck, but there wasn't any Comdata. There was Western Express. But other than that, drivers had to pay for their fuel in cash. And the way that worked was before they would leave the terminal, their dispatch would give them cash money, $100 bills, to pay for their fuel. Now, also keep in mind that fuel didn't cost near what it does now. Back then, a gallon of diesel was, 69 cents a gallon, 59 cents a gallon sometimes. I remember whenever it hit 89 cents a gallon, I didn't think it could ever get more expensive. Boy, was I wrong on that. Now, the chain was not to keep somebody from stealing your wallet. It was to keep you from accidentally losing your wallet. But anyway, I'm eating my pancakes and chattering with my dad and listening to these other truck drivers, and I'm looking out at the big trucks, and I remember thinking to myself, man, it's got to be neat to be able to drive one of those big things. Little did I know that it would end up being my career. Now, back then, very few trucks had sleepers on them. And if they did have a sleeper, it was what was known as a coffin box sleeper. It was called that because it was roughly the size of a coffin and pretty well the shape of one, too. There were a few trucks that had a big sleeper on it, but those had to be bought and put on later. So in the Lone Star truck stop, there were four bedrooms, sleeper rooms. Now, these bedrooms, they weren't anything fancy. They had a twin bed. They had a dresser with a mirror. They had a sink, a toilet, and a stand-up shower. And to get a room for the night or for the day, whichever you needed, I believe was $3. I could be wrong on that, but I believe the price was $3, which, you know, pretty cheap, especially in comparison to what it costs today. Now, my dad lived there at the truck stop. He didn't live in one of those rooms. He bought a trailer house, small trailer house, and had it set up on the east side of that parking lot, kind of out of the way. But that's where he lived. And he worked every single day. After we got done with breakfast, or brunch, I guess it would be called in this modern age, Dad takes us over to his trailer house. Mom pulls the car over there. And we take our suitcases in, and Daddy shows us where me and my sister are going to sleep. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, those are my parents. But of course, Dad told Mama to take her bag into his room. So she did. Now, this was maybe a week before Thanksgiving. I'm not sure about that. Might have been 10 days, might have been 5 days. Hell, I don't know. But I do remember that a really big cold front came in just a few days after we arrived. Now, when we got there, oh, it was hot, son of a bitch. Or at least in my memory, it was, riding in the back seat of that little Chevy Vega car with no air conditioning. And then it got cold. I remember Mama took us in the car to the Goodwill there in Sulphur Springs and bought me and my sister a couple of jackets. And then we get back to the truck stop. My dad said, "Susan, where did those jackets come from?" And she said, "Well, I went to the Goodwill and bought them." And he said, "Well, I guess that'll work then." He said, "We'll get them some better jackets later." For some reason, though, I loved that jacket. Wasn't anything special. It was one of those fluffy jackets. I don't know another way to describe it. It was kind of quilted, real fluffy. It was very, very warm. And I was sure proud to have it, I guarantee you.
As Barry and his sister settle into their new home down in Sulphur Springs, the holidays are rapidly approaching, and Barry's about to get some pretty special gifts from his dad. The kind of gifts that shape a man's life.
Well, Thanksgiving rolled around, and we had Thanksgiving dinner there at the Lone Star Truck Stop restaurant. Of course, Vessie Mae, she's the one who cooked. She and Roberta. I don't remember Roberta's last name for sure. I think it was Robinson, but I can't say that for proof positive. I can say it was a long, long time ago. But it was a really good turkey and dressing and cornbread stuffing. And I love the cranberry sauce. I didn't like the chunky kind. I like the smooth cranberry sauce. Anyway, I spent a lot of time with my dad there in the truck stop in the interceding weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I do remember that I was really disappointed because Christmas morning, we've got a little tree there in that little trailer house, and we had some presents. Daddy had bought a lot of presents, or given Mama the money to buy presents. But as soon as we got done opening presents, Dad has to walk over to the truck stop. Well, what I didn't know is he went over to the truck stop and sent all the employees home. He ran it all by himself that day. That's the kind of man my daddy was. He really took care of his employees. He took care of people. He was what, by any definition, would be called a good man. Well, a few days after Christmas, my mother and my dad sat me and my sister down one evening. And they told us they had decided to get remarried. I don't know why this bothered me, but it did. And it bothered me a whole lot. Now, my sister was just giddy. She was happy as a schoolgirl. But I was pretty bothered by it. My daddy asked, "What do you kids think about it?" And of course, my sister was very, very excited. And then he said, "Son, what's on your mind?" And now I'll tell y'all, I was not that smart. So I must have heard this somewhere before. But I looked at my parents and I said, "Well, you can put sour milk back in the refrigerator, but it ain't going to get no better." I think I was just scared all the fighting would start again. Arguing, fussing, that kind of fighting, not physical. My parents remarried December 31st, 1978, in the middle of a really big ice storm. I remember we took my daddy's pickup. He had an extended cab, or what was called a super cab, Ford pickup. We took it to the courthouse. He'd called a judge, and the judge met us there. It's kind of funny. The judge asked, because back then you had to have had a blood test to make sure that you were compatible to have children. That's no longer a thing these days, but it was back then. And the judge asked my daddy, he said, "Jerry, have y'all had the blood test?" Daddy said, "Well, hell, Judge, there's two of them standing right there." Talking about me and my sister. Just a few weeks after that, we moved into an apartment out of that little trailer house. And I thought I was living in a mansion or a palace. You know, it was really nice. We lived there for just a couple of months until we bought some property outside of town. Had 15 acres, and we built a really nice house there. But I tell you, I was inseparable from my dad. Of course, I had to go to school, but the school bus would take me to the truck stop and drop me off in the afternoons. And I'd work there at the truck stop with my dad. Now, I say work there. It's not like I knew what the hell to do. I was just a little old kid, you know. But I was pumping fuel, and back then, it was a full service. We had a self-service island, but nobody ever went to it. Hell, it was just a penny more a gallon to get full service. And I was pumping fuel, and then my daddy got me back there in the shop, in the tire shop, and taught me how to bus flats and wash trucks, change oil, and, you know, do general PM kind of maintenance on big trucks. And I'll tell y'all, I made a lot of mistakes. I screwed up a bunch. I remember one instance where I cross-threaded a drain plug, an oil drain plug. Oh, my daddy was sure enough sore at me over that. But anyway, I mean, shit happens. We had a tire guy back there other than Leroy. Now, Leroy was probably the best tire guy that's ever lived. We had another guy working back there in the shop. Called him Cowboy. A cowboy was tall, lanky, skinny as a rail. Wore a cowboy hat every time you saw him. Didn't have a tooth one in his head. He got his teeth knocked out. He wrecked his car. He was drunk. And the steering wheel knocked his teeth out. Now, I had seen Cowboy before, just a few months before, but I didn't know who he was. We were riding down the main street there in Silver Springs, me and my daddy, and there's a fella standing outside of a police car, got blood all over his shirt, and he's pissing in the street. Apparently, after the cops took him out of the car, had him handcuffed. They were taking him back to the police station, and he told them, "I got to piss." And they said, "Well, you're just going to have to hold it." And he said, "Well, no, you're going to have to pull over, or I'm going to piss all over your car." So they pulled over and took him out of the back seat, cuffed him in front, and he was pissing right there in the middle of Main Street. Won't ever forget it. Well, Cowboy could sure enough fix a tire. Now, of course, Cowboy was just his nickname. Everybody back then had a handle, and that was his. His real name was Eugene Morrison, and he died in the early 90s of cancer. And that was a sad day for everybody. I remember, aluminum rims were not very popular. Most all your big trucks had steel rims on them. And when you're busting a tire with a tire mallet, every once in a while you'll swing wrong and you'll clip the rim of that tire, or excuse me, the rim of that wheel. But you know, with those steel rims, that wasn't a big deal. Pretty easy. If you did bend one, you didn't bend it much. You just beat the hell out of it, beat it back into shape. Now, those aluminum rims, man, back then they were super expensive for the time. And I remember my daddy, telling me. I was back there working in the tire shop. And my daddy hollered over the PA system for me to pick up the intercom phone. So I did, and he told me, he said, I'm sending a truck around there. Need to take that tire off, put a new tire on. And he told me the size. And 1020 was a real popular size back then. 11245 was too. Now, I'm not sure which size tire got put on that one, but he told me, he said, now this truck's got aluminum rims on it. He said, you be super careful busting that tire down. I said, oh, hell, daddy, I got it. Now, I was about 12 years old at the time, maybe 12 and a half. But, you know, I'd been working in that truck stop for quite some time then, or what seemed like a long time for a little old kid. And I bust that tire off, lay it down there, and my very first swing, I cratered the rim on that wheel. I mean, there wasn't no saving it. Now, I tell you something. The ass-eating I got for cross-threading a drain plug wasn't nothing in comparison to the ass-eating I got for tearing up that good aluminum rim. But you know, all my daddy did was chew on my ass. He didn't spank me. Now, I did get spankings growing up. Hell, I don't know anybody who didn't, back then at least. But he understood that I was a child and that I had to learn. And, you know, he paid for my raising, and he paid it well. I was along in that age when a driver who's there in Sulphur Springs, that's where he lived, his name was Dan Swetner. Now, I don't know if Dan's still alive or not. If he is, he'd be really, really old now. He's probably gone now, but Dan had a really nice truck. I don't remember what kind of truck. I think it was a Kenworth, but I could be way wrong on that. But that would be the first time that I ever actually physically drove a truck. Now, I didn't drive it out on the highway. Dan pulled up to the full service island. He had me fill his truck up and wash the windows, check the oil and do all that, you know, everything that goes along with full service. And he told me, he said, whenever you get her full, pull it around there and park it for me. Now, back then, I didn't go by Bear. You know, Bonanza, the TV show, was real popular, and I was such an enormous young man, everybody called me Hoss. He said, whenever you get her done, pull it around there and park it for me there, Hoss. I said, you sure you want me to do that, Dan? He said, why, yeah, I imagine it'll be all right. So I got it filled up and climbed up in that driver's seat. I'm going to tell you something, boys. I was nervous. Not just some little bit either. But I knew what to do. You know, I'd listened to enough talk and been around them for a couple of years by then. So I fired it up, pushed the clutch in, and got it in first gear, and then immediately killed the truck. I let off on that clutch a little bit too soon. Plus, I think I had forgotten to release the brakes. But nobody come running out. Nobody said a word about it. I fired it back up, released the brakes, eased out real easy on that clutch. I never took it out of first gear, but I pulled it around there. Got her parked up real nice and neat. And I'll tell you something, boys, and this ain't no shit. I've never been more proud, or had never been more proud, ever in my life up to that point. I swear, whenever I got out of that truck, I did remember to set the brakes and take it out of gear, turn the key off. When I climbed out of that truck, Lord have mercy, you'd have sworn I was 10 foot tall. I had the biggest smile on my face ever. And I think, really, I knew right then I think I knew right then that I'd end up driving them big trucks down the interstate highway.
You've been listening to Bear the Voice, Barry Matthews, legendary long-haul driver, sharing his story, My Daddy and His Lone Star Truck Stop, recorded live on September the 25th, 2022, during his reset in Corinth, Mississippi. Thanks for listening, and stay with us right here on the Haul Hero Community for more of Barry's stories.